Shiras with the Mishmas of Flag and Asher Anshul. So we begin a new malacha, and we spoke a little bit about this malacha in passing because it impacted on a previous malacha. That's the malacha of Merake, the malacha of sifting. So the issue with malacha of Merake is a pretty basic problem, is that there seem to be a whole series of other malachas that are almost identical. And we're not the first ones to come to this realization. The Gemara in Shabbos already makes this observation. The Gemara says, Hainu Borer, Hainu Zora, Hainu Merakeh. But there are three malachas that are almost identical in nature. The Borer, we spent a lot of time talking about. You have a pile of stuff, you have some dirt, get it into your pile of grain. So you start to pluck away the bad stuff or the good stuff, etc. So that's the malacha of Borer. Then we spoke about the malacha of Zora. Some Zoras, you throw the grain up to the wind, and the wind somehow winnows it out. I have no idea what I'm talking about. Winnows out, separates the chaff or whoever it is. So that's also an act of separation. And then the third one is Merakeh, which is sifting. So I take my flour, which has some fine flour, coarse flour, and other stuff inside. I pour it through a sieve, and it starts to separate out the good part, the bad part, etc. So the Gemara says it's all the same thing. It's all the exact same halacha. There are three ways of doing the same basic principle of separating two things from one another. So why do you need all three to be separate halachas? The Gemara says, you're right. That theoretically, you really could have derived one from another. But all three were in the Mishkan. So since all three were in the Mishkan, each one of them is considered to be halachically a separate halacha. Might not have needed that it's a separate halacha. So for our purposes, not all that much. But in terms of Hilchos Kavanos, if a person is Mechal Shabbos B'Shogeg, so they have to bring a Korban Katos. So the Gemara tells us that, let's say a person does multiple Malachas on Shabbos, so you can be Chai of multiple Chatosis. If a person keeps on doing the same Malacha over and over again, he cooks and he cooks some more, and he cooks some more, and he cooks some more. So if he didn't realize in the middle, so it's just one big Shkaga, so it's all covered by one Korban Katos. But if he does multiple Malachas, so now we have a principle called Yesh Chilik Malachas B'Shabbos. So it's important in Hilchos Kavanos. We'll get the Maseches Krisos in a little while from now. So it's a couple of Masechtas down the line, but they're short Masechtas, so you'll get there pretty quickly. So there'll be enough Kaminas Latina. But in terms of our purposes, there's not all that much of a difference. The Malachas are pretty much all the same. So becomes the Gemara and says that it may be important for us to identify other kinds of actions. There may be certain kinds of Maisim that are clearly also Shabbos. It's not a question that such and such actions are prohibited. But we're not quite sure which malacha, which one of these three it falls under. So the classic case that the Gemara gives at the end of Masechta Shabbos is Meshamer Asayakin, and that's really where Esli begins. The Gemara speaks about straining wine. The Gemara says, quotes the Mishnah. The Mishnah speaks about the prohibition of straining wine on Shabbos. The Mishnah doesn't say whether it's Asa Min HaTorah or Min HaRabbanan. So the Gemara says it's Yichayev. The Gemara says that Meshamer is Chayev on Shabbos. There's no question that if you take wine, that has all kind of gluk, all kind of junk in it, and you pour through a strainer, that's a malacha there at Eitz on Shabbos. The only thing the Gemara is not sure about is which malacha does it fall under. So the Gemara presents the shaila in a very strange way. The Gemara says, "Mishuma, Mishamir, Mishumai, Masrin Bey." What hasra do you give a person for Mishamir? Now we're not talking about a person Mishonye. Now we're talking about a person Bebezin. So guys, Mechal Shabbos, intentionally Mechal Shabbos. So we know the Torah tells us that if a person Mechal Shabbos intentionally in the presence of Edim, and there's hasra that's given, there's a warning that's given, and the person accepts the Hasra, he says that I'm going to do it anyway, even though you're warning me. That's quite amazing. The Mishnah says in the end of the first Berakah Makos that Misas Bezin was almost never, ever, ever meted out. Very, very unlikely that Bezin would actually kill somebody for a Chiyah Misas Bezin. The Gemara has a Machlokes HaTanaim, whether it was once every 7 years or once every 70 years, was that considered to be like a bloody Bezin? That was like extreme. So according to one Tana, if it happened once every 70 years, it was a crazy thing. It was a Meshurah Dikabez that, so the, you know, when you read Chumash, you get the impression everyone's being skeeless, right? Everyone's being killed every 10 minutes. So that's not exactly what's happening. That means there are a lot of warnings that are being given, but in terms of practical punishments, it never really happened. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a lot of warnings because he cares about us. He loves us so much. He doesn't want us to do anything silly. He doesn't want us to be Mechal Shabbos. He doesn't want us to kill each other. He doesn't want us to be Mak Avimah. He doesn't want us to do all these terrible avarice. So he warns us and warns us and warns us again, even though at the end of the day it never really happens. It's kind of like kids and parents also. I think the kids, you'll probably appreciate this. Maybe they won't appreciate it. Sometimes your parents tell you, you know, if you do this, you're going to get this punishment, that punishment, the other punishment. My kids always tell me, I always forget what I said. But I keep on saying it a million times over. Why? Because I love my kids so much. I don't want them to do anything bad. But at the end of the day, are they ever going to really get punished? 99% of the time, it never really happens. So, okay, that's good. Okay, good. So that's pretty much the same model there also. But the Gemara said, we still have to know the sugya. We still have to know. So if a person is Meshamer Sayayin and a person strains wine on Shabbos, he's Chayev Skilah, he's Chayev Mizabezi, no question about it. The only thing the Gemara is not sure about is which Hasra do you have to give him? Because in order for a person to be Chayev Nisa, it's not enough that there are witnesses there. We have to warn him specifically, and he has to say, Afal Pichein, I'm accepting your warning, and I'm going to do it anyway. The guy's Mamish Meshulah, there's two Edom standing there. And they say to him, don't strain that wine. He says, I'm going to do it anyway. And I know I'm going to be Chayav Misa. It's worth it for me to be Chayav Misa. I got to strain this wine. So that's why it never happens, because it's so bizarre that they should have such cases of such a Meshuggah. So the Gemara says that you have to give him Asura, but we're not quite sure which Asura to give. So the Gemara quotes a Machlekes HaMeroim. So one opinion is that you have to give him Asura. Don't be Boirer on the Shabbos. And the other day, the Gemara says, no, give him Asura. Don't be Merake. That's Amalacha. Don't sift flour. Don't do the Malacha Merake. So the Gemara is very startling, because why don't you just say to the guy, don't be Meshamer? Why don't you just say to the guy, don't strain wine on Shabbos? The Gemara doesn't even entertain that as a possibility. The Gemara is picking on other malachas. The Gemara is picking on the Avos malachas. So this opens up a whole world for us in terms of the relationship between Avos and Toldos. We spoke about this several times, that there are 39 main categories of malachas on Shabbos. That's the given. That's derived from Mishkan. Whatever was major importance in the Mishkan, so that's considered to be an Amalach. And each one of the Avos Malachas has subcategories as well. So there are Avos, there are Toldos. If a person does an Av on Shabbos, he's Chayav Skila. A person does a Toldos, Chayav Skila. Are there any differences whatsoever? So Tosfos here raises the following question. Tosfos says, it would appear from this Gemara that when you give a person Hasra on Shabbos, you have to name the Av. You can't just say, don't do this action. You have to identify one of the 39 Avos. You got to bring out Rav Brochek's book. You got to read all, look at all the pictures and figure out, what's the name of the Av? Just to say to the guy, don't turn on the light on Shabbos. That's not enough. You have to say, don't do the Malach of Havar on Shabbos. Or just to say to a guy something, you know, something just practically, don't do X, Y, and Z. That's not enough. You have to name the Malach. Is this the Machav Avadish? Is this Kaisiv? Is this Boiner? Is this that? You have to be getting, sometimes it's not clear what the Av is. So Tosfos quotes an opinion that says, and the fact that the Gemara put such a to-do about which Av it is, Mishumai Master Bey, it makes it sound like if we give Hasra, just to say, don't strain the wine, that would not be acceptable. So now we have to identify exactly which Av it falls under which category. And then Tosfos quotes another thing that says, no, you don't really have to give Hasra B'Shem Av. You can give Hasra B'Shem Tod also. If I say to the guy, don't strain wine, that would also constitute a warning. The only thing is, if you give a Hasra B'Shem Av, if you warn the person which Av to do, and you give them the wrong Av, so that's a joke. It'll think you're making a big letzonis. Let's say, Lamarshal, I see somebody writing on Shabbos. So if I say to them, oh, yeah, yeah, what you're doing is a terrible malacha, and you're in violation of the Yisr of building on Shabbos. You're in violation of the Yisr of cooking on Shabbos. The guy thinks I'm crazy. He's writing, and I'm telling him not to cook on Shabbos. So that's not called a hasra. That wouldn't qualify as a hasra. So according to the second opinion of Tosfos, if you give the wrong hasra, that would be a problem. But if you want to give hasra b'shem atolda, that would be okay. So that's a very, very, you know, technical machlokes. When you give hasra for a guy on Shabbos, you have to give hasra b'shem av, or can you give hasra b'shem atolda? But the longest part of that is very important. It speaks to the relationship between avos and toldos. If there's a basic question, what is the name of the Yisra and Shabbos? Is the name of the Yisra and Shabbos not to do one of the avos malachos, and it just is that tolda falls under that category? Or is the name of the Yisra tolda? The name of the Yisra is not called the av per se. So again, that goes way beyond that discussion right now. It's a little conceptual machlokes with some important practical implications. But getting back to our sifting and our straining story, so the bottom line is everybody agrees that you're not allowed to strain wine on Shabbos. That's a given, not in the Shaila. Everyone agrees it's also in the Torah. According to one opinion of the Gemara, it's closer to the model of Merakin, of sifting flour, which is Amalacha. And according to the other name, the Gemara, it's closer to the model of Boirer. At the end of the day, for us, it doesn't make any difference at all. No one's giving Mises Beis Din today. We don't have the Beis HaMikdash, so there is no Beis, there is no Mises Beis Din. But Afa Pichain, straining is also, and sifting is also, Boirer, everything is also, and you have to just figure out conceptually which malach it falls under. So this din, you're not allowed to be Shabbos Sayayi, you're not allowed to strain wine on Shabbos. So this din carries with it a few important details that do play out for us. It's important for us to understand exactly what some of the ramifications of this din are. So in contrast to on Shabbos, the Mishnah, in the end of Masechta Shabbos, in the 20th reference of the Shabbos, so the Mishnah says you're not allowed to strain on Shabbos, but the Mishnah does speak about the permissibility of straining on Yom Tov. It says, it's okay, you can take wine and put it through a strainer on Yom Tov, and that would be okay. So at first glance, that sounds pretty simple. It sounds pretty straightforward, because after all, it's ochel nefesh. It's food related. We spoke about this many times. The Torah says, achashi ochel nefesh. So whatever is food related is permissible. I'm allowed to cook, I'm allowed to bake, I'm allowed to eat dough, I'm allowed to carry food. Anything that's food related is mutter on yontif. So why would I think that this is a little bit startling? So this is something that we spoke about in the past, that it's not always true, that it's not so simple which malachas are mutter on yontif. Just because something relates to food does not automatically translate to mean that it's mamish mutter on yontif. Let's say the mashal we spoke about, the Gemara says in the beginning of the Sefer says that you're not allowed to go to your backyard and pluck an apple off your tree on yontif. Why not? I want to eat an apple on yontif. I'm allowed to bake applesauce on yontif, so why can't I pluck that apple on yontif? The Gemara says beferish it's also. So it's not clear why that is also. That was a big question. And we showed him, some Rishonim would say that it's only also with the Rabbanim. Whatever relates to food is heter gamur, and the only reason why certain activities are also is because they detract from yontif for whatever different reasons that are given. They're all prohibited in the Rabbanim. There are others who say that no, that the mamash also min haTorah, that the plucked apple would really be an iser min haTorah, and some of the heter of ochel nefesh wouldn't apply. So that's a running machlokes. The Gemara says beta, which malachas of ochel nefesh are mutter, which are not. So here you have to analyze that statement in light of what it says in the Mishnah, but the Mishnah says explicitly that one is permitted to strain one's wine on yontif. So shalos, why should that be so? What makes this Mishnah even more difficult to understand is that there's a Mishnah b'Sefes Beitza that speaks about limitations of borer on yontif. The Mishnah says explicitly that one is not allowed to be borer with a kli on yontif. If a person wants to take a regular sieve or something and to sip things, do regular kinds of acts of borer on yontif, that is a problem. So come to Rishonim and bother with the question, if Borer and Meshamer and Merakin, it's all the same picture, it's all the same basic malacha of separating bad from good. So how come the Mishnah Beitza speaks about Borer B'Kli being Asur, whereas the Mishnah here by straining speaks about straining, using a Kli, using a strainer, being permissible? What's the difference between the two? So there is a big machlekes in Rishonim, what the answer to that dilemma is. So some of the Rishonim explained that min haTorah, everything is going mutter. Min haTorah, you're allowed to be borer on yontif, you're allowed to be merakin on yontif, you're allowed to be mishamer on yontif. Anything that's food-oriented, food-related, is covered by the heter of ochel nefesh, everything is okay. There's nothing to worry about at all. Min derabbanan, certain things are aser. So how do you know what's aser, what's not aser? So the Rishonim, some of the Rishonim explained that things that are done for long-term types of processes, those kinds of things are problematic. Things that are done for immediate kind of use, so those kinds of things are permissible. So the bora that Chazal was describing, and I don't know too much about how you bora a kidney, as the Mishnah says, and you separate beans and junk and stuff, so those are processes that are done for longer periods of time. So things that are done for longer periods of time are problematic. Things that are done for shorter periods of time, things that are identified with immediate use of this day of yontif, that would be permissible. So that's generally how we assume halacha, that although there are certain limitations on borer and certain limitations on merakin and certain limitations on mishamer when it comes to yontif, but if it's done in a manner that's done for very, very immediate kind of use, so then that would pretty much be permissible on yontif. So the question is, does any of this really matter for us? Do we do any of these kinds of things? Ben Shabbos, Ben Yoga. Most of us are not straining our wines. We go to the store, we buy a good bottle of wine, the wine is pre-strained a million times over. So most of us are not straining our stuff, most of us are not being borer at kidneys. So does any of this really play out for us in terms of Shabbos and Yoga?
I happen to actually own a wine strainer.
Okay.
Does it make any difference now that the wine and the bottles are...
Okay. So we'll get that in a minute. That's exactly what we'll lead up to. So the most common shaila that we have in terms of the issue of straining is the issue of filtering. The issue in can a person put something, let's say water or other drinks, other liquids, through a filter on Shabbos and Yom Tov? Is that problematic enough? We have to take a couple of steps back to the shaila. And the sugya appears at the very end of Masechet Shabbos, where the Mishnah, the Gemara, speak about a person who wants to strain wine, but the wine is fairly clear anyway. So why is he straining the wine in the first place? Because he wants to make it even clearer. He wants to make it even a little bit better. He wants to take a little bit, some of the impurities out, but the wine is pretty much drinkable the way it is. So that's a complicated story. So the Mishnah and the Gemara seem to say that if you have yayin tzolol, if you have wine that's very, very clear anyway, there aren't too many dregs in it in the first place, so then one would be permitted to strain even by using a strainer mamash. And that's talking about on Shabbos also. What's the rationale of that? So the stum of the pshat is that it's not really borip solus and oichel. There's nothing really there. It's solus means when the wine is not really drinkable. Got a lot of dregs, a lot of junk sitting around inside the wine. I wouldn't drink the wine the way it is. And now I want to strain it. So that's called a malacha, either malacha merakit or borer or tol b'shamet, whatever the name of the malacha is, depending on what we spoke about before, that would be a problem. But if the yain is solus anyway, the wine is totally drinkable anyway, and I just want to make it a little bit nicer, a little bit clearer, a little bit better, so that's not considered to be a malacha altogether. So that's a big machlekes of Rishonim. Is that statement that I just said absolutely 100% true min haTorah, or is it even permissible min haRabbanim? So probably most of the Rishonim are of the opinion that a person is permitted to strain something that's tzolul, something that is clear anyway. One is permitted to strain that in any shape or form. You can even use a strainer for that. That's you can use anything whatsoever. That's not considered to be a problem whatsoever. That's the way most of Rishonim learn. The Rambam has a little bit of a different twist on it. So the Rambam learns that when the Gemara says that it's permissible, all the Gemara means to say is that it's not an issur min haTorah. It would still be prohibited min haRabbanan. And the only reason why the Mishnah permits it is because you're using something which is not a normal thing to strain with. So the Gemara speaks a little bit about the differences of using strainers and kind of just using cloths. You use a shmata something. So if you pour a liquid through a cloth, it will also strain it a little bit. But that's not the normal way of straining things. So the Rambam understood that the only time that it's mutl lechatchilosh lechatchilosh to strain something that's drinkable anyway would only be so if it's being done in somewhat of an abnormal fashion. So the halacha mikra din, we don't really follow the Rambam. Most of the Rishonim admit that as long as it meets the criteria of what's called tzolul, so that all kind of straining and filtering and everything in the above would be permissible. So now the question becomes, what's considered to be tzolul? Within this view that we follow, that as long as it's drinkable the way it is, that's okay. So what constitutes drinkable exactly? So the Rishonim discuss, it's a kind of a liquid, either it's a water or it's a wine, other kind of a liquid, that most people would probably drink anyway, even if they didn't have a filtering system in place. Most people would drink it the way it is, even if they wouldn't strain it. So you're really straining it, liesses eggs. You're really straining it for a little bit of extra boost, but push comes to shove, if you were stuck somewhere and all you had was this drink, so most people would drink it the way it is. That's the definition that most, that we usually assume. The Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Prima Gadim, that what would that locha be if you have a kind of a liquid that most people would be okay with drinking, but you personally are very, very finicky. You personally would never, ever drink it the way it is. So the Prima Gadim is not sure. Maybe that's also a problem. This is a general question in terms of Shabbos, in terms of all areas of halacha. You have these kind of categories of things that people care about. So who do you follow? Do you follow what the Olam does, or do you follow what the person does? Like the Moshe you have, and Uchus and Mikvahs. There's a din that if a person has a chatzitza, when they go to the mikvah, it's a davar hamakpid, it's something that they care about, that can disqualify the tefillah. So who defines what you care about? So that's a machlokes in Rishonim. Some Rishonim say that it's defined by the olam, by the objective standards. You ask most people around if they care about it. And some Rishonim say it's defined by the person, him or herself. So in Shulchan Aruch, we pass in the chumrah d'shayla. We pass that they're both true. That if either most people are makbid, or you personally are makbid, that could potentially disqualify tefillah. This is a common shayla. A person calls friends with a shayla, they just came back from the mikvah, they found a little something. So I'll usually ask them two questions. Is this something that you care about, and is this something that normal? Not that I'm insinuating the other person is normal, but I have to pose the question properly to make sure that nobody really cares about it. So that's what we assume the lochi are also. If you have a liquid that has some kind of impurity in it, and most people don't care about it, and you also personally don't care about it, that's okay. Then you're right. Then you can go ahead and, quote unquote, strain that. According to the Rambam, you can only strain it in an abnormal fashion. According to most Rishonim, you can even strain it in a normal fashion. So as long as it passes that test, that most people don't care about it, and you personally don't care about it as well. So this has become the background to a lot of shadows that come up, particularly in terms of filtering, in terms of water. I think we're coming over here.
Do care about it, but for some reason you couldn't filter it and still eat it.
Right, so that's called not really caring about it. It means if you were stuck, would you really care about it? Would you say, yeah, that's so important, I'm not such a bafunak. Some people are such bafunak, they're so delicate and finicky that they wouldn't touch us on many circumstances. And other people would be okay. So let's say, for example, when you turn on your sink, regular sink water, so you're in the burger field, you turn on your sink, so many of the sinks have, don't they have like little strainers on them? What are they called?
The
yeah, whatever they're called. So would you drink water if it didn't have that? you don't even know that it has that. So most people would probably drink water, even though, technically speaking, it's a kli hamiyuchad l'kach, it's a mishameres, it's a sieve, it's a filter, it's made for the purposes of filtering a little bit. But since most people probably wouldn't care about it, and you personally don't care about it either, all right, you don't even know about it, so then that would be okay. But lu yitzuya, that people really, really wouldn't drink the water that way, or lu yitzuya, that you wouldn't drink the water that way, then you wouldn't be permitted to turn on your water or your regular faucet on Shabbos. That would be a problem. And Yom Tov, that would be permissible, because in Yom Tov, that's called filtering for immediate use, and that's a kind of a filtering that everybody does. Under normal standard purposes, that would be like the Mishameres, that's permissible in the Mishnah about the Yom Tov.
For drinking or for washing dishes, you say you can't turn the faucet on if you're makpid on this thing.
Right, so you would be permitted to do it. If all you want is to use the water for washing dishes, that would be okay. So now we get into the...
If you usually put it through a Brita filter, you always usually just drink from a Brita filter water, but if there was no Brita filter...
So that's called inamakwin, right? If you and most people wouldn't care, right?
So what about the water in New York?
Right? That's the multi-billion-dollar question about the water in New York City, or other waters that may have other bugs in them. So let's talk about the water in New York City for a moment. So until 4 or 5 years ago or so nobody even thought about the shiloh. Everybody just had their little schmitschicks on their water faucets. Like, they did it or they didn't. Nobody really cared. Nobody thought twice about it. And it was mutter. And then all of a sudden there was a discovery that was made that there may be a potentially serious problem of bugs in the New York City water. So you may be wondering, manishtan, that the New York City water got bugs. Wouldn't you think that the New York City water is the highest quality, the best, purest water around? So the answer is, yeah, it is. That's exactly why it may have the problem that other places don't have. Because the New York City water was so high quality, so some of the later filtering that was done, the later stages were not being done to New York City water because it was such a better quality water to begin with. And therefore, some of these kind of organisms were finding their way into the water. Whereas in other places, like in Bergenfield, where the water wasn't so great, so then they were filtering to get out whatever stuff. So that's why we don't have those problems in that water. So it was a strange benafichu, but lemaisa, this was discovered years ago in New York, that they had these little schmitschicks floating around in the water. So this is a double question. This was a kashrus issue and a Shabbos issue, and the answer to the Shabbos issue may depend on what you think about the kashrus issue. So this was b'shaito, a major, and still running my It's still a raging machlokes about is this even an issue in the first place? So there were some who were very concerned about this, who felt that the water in New York City mounts the chashash of machlokes seros, and you have to filter it in such a way that gets out all this kind of stuff. So that was one approach. There was some folks who took that approach. There were other folks who took a different approach to this whole water issue in New York City, based on a whole series of different reasons. Yeah, we're not really learning the sugya of kashrus right now, but it's important because it does impact on the Shabbos. So there were some poskim who said that the issue was not an issue for multiple reasons. So one possible reason was an old question, an old issue, about how much you have to check for bugs in general. So let's say, and if you get about water, any given food, the person takes a piece of lettuce, takes a piece of cabbage, the person takes anything, and they want to know, well, do I have to be worried that there are bugs in this thing or not? So there's a general rule that we have in Halacha that we follow Rov, that if you have a particular item, if there's a Rov, that there's no problem, so then you follow Rov. Haraya, we drink milk, and we eat meat, and we do all those kinds of things, even though there's a chance that the animal, the cow, has a trefa in it. It's possible if the cow has a hole in its stomach, and if that would be the case, then all the milk that comes out of the cow would be trefa. It doesn't matter whether it's chavis or not. The chavis or Jewish cows also have holes in their stomachs, so that doesn't make a difference. So if you're really concerned about the trefas, so then you can't drink any milk. Well, they say, how can you ever eat any meat? When they shecht an animal, they don't open up the animal and investigate and see if they have holes in the stomach, holes in hearts, and holes in brains. Nobody does any of that kind of stuff. So there's an off chance that maybe it has a trefa. So the Rishonim, right, being in the school, that's the bin. You follow Rov and finish. And the Rov animals are not dying. Most animals are not trefas. Most animals are perfectly okay. And therefore, we rely on that all the time. All of Halacha, everybody relies on Rov. The only thing is, the Rishonim point out that if you have what's called the Minha Motsoi, if you have something that's it's not a majority, but it's a significant minority, it means there's a real potential problem here, and the numbers are a little bit higher than we would have liked, that's what's called the Minha Motsoi. And Minha Motsoi you have to check for. Then there's a requirement to check. That's the sugya that Rishonim point out. That's the reason why we wait check for problems in the lungs. When we shecht an animal today, nobody opens up the heads and the stomachs, but we all open up the lungs to check to make sure the lungs don't have any problems in them. Why do we check the lungs over anything else? because the percentage of problems in lungs is higher than in other places, and that mitzvah is called an halacha miyotam batsoi. So that's the principle of halacha then. A miyot she'en amatsoi, you don't even have to bother looking for. A miyot amatsoi, you have to search for, you have to make sure to get it. There is a machlekes haposkim, is that requirement of looking for miyot amatsoi, is that a din derais, is that a din derabanan? That was a machlekes haposkim. But whatever it is, usually assume it's only mid derabanan. It's a chumah mid derabanan, you have to check for miyot amatsoi. So the poskim write that how much is the miyot amatsoi, what's the percentage of the nishkinas yaakov? He was a Tamidim of Reb Chaim Volozhiner, so he writes that we assume that 1 out of 10 chance is called the Mira Motzei. If something is a 10% problem, that's called the Mira Motzei. So that's the Shaila. Whenever you eat any kind of vegetable, any kind of fruit, anything where there's a potential chance of a bug in there, are you obligated to start looking or not? So if there's an overwhelming odds that there's nothing here altogether, so then you're not mechuyav to look. You're allowed to eat the food without looking. But if there's what's called the mina matzoi, then you have to be concerned. So there are different fruits and different vegetables, and that's what starts to get very nitty gritty about how do you, the question is how do you define mina matzoi? Does it mean 1 out of 10 portions, 1 out of 10 boxes, 1 out of 10 bites? So there are a lot of different ways to potentially figure out how do you calculate 1 out of 10. And one can imagine that when you try, anytime you have a halacha that depends on numbers and you try to put it into the real world, so it becomes very hard to make these kinds of calls. So that's part of the reason why you have different standards, different shifas about what has to be checked, what doesn't have to be checked in terms of the world of halachas talayim, the world of bucks. Everyone agrees to the basic rules. The basic rules are if there's 1 in 100 chance that there's a problem here, you don't have to check. Everyone agrees that there's 1 in 10 chance you have to check, and then you have to try to figure out what practically meets what criteria. So that impacts, I would say, Nukhus Kasher. So that's it. There are some foods that will fall. You don't have to check altogether. There are other foods that are very, very high infestation rates. And then there are other foods that, depending on the time of year, depending on there have been different on the crops, there are different ways of figuring it out. So you have a whole industry out there of bug-free, how do you make sure you have all your foods are bug-free. So that shyly impacts on the water issue also. But then when you have, there's a question of bugs in the water, it means every single cup of water has bugs in it, or only certain times there are bugs in it, or depending on which part of the water you get. So that's issue number one. So it's not even 100% clear that you even have a mira matzoi necessarily in terms of how many bugs, how often the bugs are present in the water. So that's one factor involved in the water controversy. Then you have another factor is that are those bugs nikola ayin, are they really recognizable, really discernible as bugs? So everybody agrees that if you have something that's microscopic, so that's not a problem, obviously. The Torah doesn't, everything, there are bugs in everything, everything has bacteria, everything that stinks floating around, those are not bugs in halacha. It has to be something you could see with the naked eye. So that is a further machlokes haposkim. Very, very often, I could see something with the naked eye, but I can't see it as a bug. It means it looks like a speck, it looks like a something, but I can't see it. If I can't see it with my naked eye, then it's not at all a concern. I can see it, and now once I see it, then I pull out a microscope, I look, I say, by God, it's got legs, it's got ankles, it looks like a bug. So it might be oh yeah. So I was just last week they were showing me from some cashless issues, so they were showing me a whole bunch of these black specks on something. So I looked at it, I see black specks 100%. But if you would ask me where the bugs are, I don't know, but I can't see any legs. So they put it under a microscope. You can see the legs. You can see it's a bug. So that's another shayla. Is that considered to be nikolayan? It's not called nikolayan. If you machmer that shayla, that's going to have a lot of chumras. If you make on that shayla, it's going to have a lot of chumras. So that's another factor.
I was always wondering how that applies to the New York City water issue.
The what?
How that applies to the New York City water issue.
What?
I mean, my pour a cup of water in New York, I don't see anything.
Right. So the truth is that it depends on what you're looking for. You can sometimes see like a whitish filmish or something in the New York City water. So believe it or not, that's like 10 million of those little things floating around. So you may not want to know that, but that's what it is. So nobody ever realized that because nobody ever bothered looking for it. So they just thought that was just schmutz in the water. So it looks like schmutz, but if you look at it with the proper microscopes, then you realize that it's actually bugs. So many folks can say, okay, big deal, it's bugs, so what? It doesn't matter, it's too small, halakhah, it doesn't make any difference. And then there are other factors that where the source of the bugs are, that there are special dinim about it. The bugs emanate from within the ground, and they emanate from within what's called, they would have a pirash, and the bugs come from the reservoir, they would have on the ground. That's a whole other angle of the shadow. So you have a few different stanim l'kula. Then you have other factors that that if you take a, let's say you take water and you cook it, so maybe that may destroy the bug itself. That's another whole other din, Michus Tarovis and Michus Berry. Again, there are a lot of factors that are flying around in terms of the bug issue in the water. Hayotim HaDvarim is that there are different opinions in Poskim. There are different, some of the Poskim in New York were very concerned about this, and many Poskim were very, very less concerned about this. So different kashrus organizations have different takes on this. So the OU is machmer in this. I mean, they if you go to an OU thing, so they're telling you that they're chushish in this. I mean, they'll insist that all the water that they use in New York City is going to be filtered. Again, that's what their policy is. That's the official OU policy. They're not saying b'tor z'vah that they hold it's a problem. There was a chilukei deis within the OU poskim over the years that different rabbanim have different opinions about this, even within the hierarchy of the OU. But the ma'aseh, they are chushish for it. And many of the Hashgacha organizations in New York are concerned with some are not. Some have different opinions about this. So now the Shabbos becomes, where does this play out in terms of the Shabbos? So a guy is living in Washington Heights, and he wants everyone to be happy. He doesn't want anyone to say they're not going to eat in his house. So he puts on these filters. So he invests in his money, puts on these filters on his faucets, and he buys his Brita, that kind of, all this kind of stuff. And try to show by yourself. 6 days a week, that's wonderful. What about on Shabbos? Is he permitted to use these filter systems on Shabbos? So it relates to Asugya. So if you hold that he doesn't really need it altogether, if he thinks that this is all not really true, he doesn't need it. If he was stuck somewhere, he would drink from a regular water in New York City. So if he holds that way, and most people hold that way, I'm not sure whether that's true or not, but if he holds that way, most people hold that way, so then that would be okay. So then that would be, he's just doing it the SSAs. So that would be like the person who's just straining the wine to make it a little bit tastier, but he doesn't really care that much. But if he is nervous about it, he would not drink regular New York City water. Or most people, let's say, wouldn't drink regular New York City water. If that's the case, so then what he's doing may be more problematic. Unless one argues that maybe it's less of a problem here, because he's not doing it to correct a physical flaw in the water, he's doing it to correct the halachic flaw in the water. If it is the goyim have no problem drinking all these bugs in the water. They couldn't care less about them. If they don't see, it doesn't hurt them. Maybe what we don't see doesn't hurt us either, but that's already part of our discussion from before. So maybe you could argue that this is a little bit better, because this is not even physical in nature, this is only halachic in nature. So that's a big, big question. We touched on this a little bit earlier this year. When you have boner and something which is not a real psolus, it's only halachic psolus, is that considered to be a problem altogether? So the bottom line, the yotzim advarim is like this. For the people who don't really think this is a serious problem in kashrus, so then it's probably not a serious problem in chushabs either. The people who are really, really convinced that it's a serious problem in kashrus, so they should probably, like the many, they should not put in Shabbos also, they shouldn't use the filters on Shabbos. In YU, there are a couple of signs up. I still don't understand them. They're very complicated about some of the water fountains, which ones are problems, which are not problems. I'm never there for Shabbos, so I don't bother reading too carefully. But there's a whole shtickle Torah on some of the water fountains in the Beis Medrash about what can and cannot be used based on Hilchos water fountains, based on Hilchos Beira, based on Hilchos bugs. You have to have whole shit cloth to figure out where you can get a couple.
But if you use it for cooking, or you would use it to wash your floor, right, like you use it to wash your car, so there's not no such like low plug that I would. I have a filter there just for drinking.
No, so if you want to use it for other things, it's okay. Let's say you want to wash your dishes on Shabbos with the filter, that would be okay.
But then pour yourself a cup of water would be strained.
Because if I really would never ever drink this water without straining the water. So now for me, now I'm doing something that's important for me. So we have a split. If I'm using it to wash my dishes, that would be okay. I'm using it to drink, that would be a problem. Again, I'm not taking a clear cut. We all live in New Jersey anyway, so I'm not taking a stand for this shayla. But again, this is a hot topic in New York, and again, it starts as a kashrus shayla, and much of the Shabbos angle depends on what you think about the kashrus part.